British Sky Broadcasting, in association with Universal Pictures and Renaissance Pictures, present Darkman. Audio described by Matt Robinson on behalf of the MCS Agency. A tugboat cuts through the murky waters next to a quayside in the grey afternoon light. Inside a warehouse on the docks, Eddie Black, a formidable, sharply dressed black man, rests against his Cadillac, barking orders into his phone. Around him, various hoods bustle about, carrying boxes and busying themselves.
"'Cause he's an asshole! Tell him no! Tell him no, too! Him? Tell fuck you! No, I'm gonna be here a minute. Got some guy coming up thinks he's gonna muscle me out of my property. What's it matter? Just another tough guy, that's all.
You're driving up.
Get the pieces."
He hands on the phone.
We got a surprise for these gentlemen.
Two dark Cadillacs drive along the quayside. They park in formation outside the factory, spewing out eight mean-looking thugs. A large, heavily armed group of Eddie Black's men approach the newcomers, who allow themselves to be frisked.
Bunch of cuties, huh?
You told the deck, you war.
Robert Durant and his gang are stripped of their guns and nunchucks and frog-marched into the gloomy large warehouse. Durant has a jowly, lizard-like face in which resides two cold blue eyes. His team of thugs include the bald-headed bruiser, Paulie, the ponytailed and scarred Guzman, the long-haired joker, Smiley. They all wear long overcoats. More of Black's men appear from upper levels, all guns trained at the heavily outnumbered and now unarmed Durant crew. A cruel smile playing on his lips, Black leans nonchalantly against his car, filing his nails.
"Bum leg?"
The aptly named Skip taps his left leg below the knee.
"No leg."
"I was engaged to a girl once with a wooden leg."
"Yeah? What happened?"
"Had to break it off."
"All right, cut the crap. I got three things to say to you, Durant. One, I ain't selling my property. Two, nobody muscles Eddie Black, especially a bunch of dinks. And three, if y'all don't like that, which I can already see you don't, we can cut your balls off. Maybe that'd be more satisfactory to you."
Durant nods to Smiley, who whips out a machine gun from the false leg. Black's commands, two cars filled with gun-toting men blast out from the large crates which had hidden them. Calmly, Durant shoots the drivers with deadly accuracy.
"Take your car! Take your car! The goddamn gun!"
Isolated now and surrounded by the hopping Skip and the others, a worried but defiant Black stands still. Smiley holds out his arm to steady Skip. A hanging light swings ominously behind Black. Durant snips off the end of his cigar as two of his men grab Black, who struggles in vain.
"Now, let's consider my points."
He approaches Black menacingly.
"One by one. One."
He puts Black's index finger in the cigar cutter.
"I try not to let my anger get the better of me.
Next finger.
Two. I don't always succeed. Three. I've got 7 more points.
A ghostly image of a bandaged face emerges and fades through clouds of mist billowing in darkness. Liam Neeson, Francis McDormand in Darkman. With Colin Friels, Larry Drake. Story by Sam Raimi. Screenplay by Chuck Farah, Sam Raimi, Evan Raimi, Daniel Golden, and Joshua Golden. Directed by Sam Raimi. Music by Danny Elfman. Piercing blue eye stares intently through a camera lens. The lens zooms in and from 3 different angles photographs the nose of an Asian man dressed in a white lab coat.
System ready to receive input.
A machine scans the photos and numbers are punched. A 3D graph of the nose appears on a computer screen with the words digitization complete beneath. Scientific equipment whirs and compresses as the laboratory is a hive of activity. Flesh and fat-filled syringes create a liquid skin replica of the nose, which hangs suspended mid-air. Dr. Peyton Westlake uses a scalpel to remove a particle of the nose and observes it under a heavy-duty microscope.
Just hold together, you little...
Shit.
Fragmentation. Time?
99 minutes. Again.
Why?
Peyton, a handsome man in his 30s with bright eyes and thick brown hair, paces the room.
What is destabilizing it? Why won't the liquid skin last?
The created nose melts in a Petri dish.
The vivification process was easy.
Tissue rejection?
We licked that. I know we're close. We're smart guys. So what is it? Why can't we make these cells stable?
Yakatito, his Asian assistant, looks downcast to the floor.
What now?
Now? Well, we think it out again. Patiently, objectively. I don't care how long it takes, Yakatito. I know it's out there, waiting for us. I can feel it. God, I can almost taste it.
Later that night, Peyton is relaxing with his partner, Julie Hastings, watching slides from when they were younger.
Here she is, the girl of your dreams.
Ow! Oh,
baby. Ah, you are sweet.
How's the skin coming?
Still won't last past 99.
It'll happen. Yeah. It will happen, you know.
Look at you.
Rebel without a clue. those were the days.
Hey.
What?
Come here.
What?
Come here.
I know what's on your mind.
Let me show you something.
They embrace and he starts to undress her.
God, you always wear things that are so difficult to...
Ta-da!
Oh, yeah. Oh. Come on, let's dance.
Later, Peyton sits on the bed, intently watching Julie's sleeping figure. He tenderly strokes her shoulder, and a smile creeps across his lips. Next morning, Peyton brings coffee to Julie, but accidentally leaves a cut mark on a memo she is referring to whilst on the phone.
Her porcelain, please.
Here you go, babe.
Peyton! Herb, hi, it's Julie Hastings. Listen, I found some memos when I was researching the von Hofenstein deal that I don't think I was supposed to find. They're from Strack to a guy named Claude Belisarius, and they're records of payments to various people on the Zoning Commission. Well, I think they're payoffs. Yeah, well, what I want to do is talk to Strack first, give him the benefit of the doubt. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. All right, I'll talk to you later, Herb. Bye.
Bye, Herb.
He grabs her.
Oh, I don't want to go.
Don't go.
I have to go. I have to go now. I'm late.
Go, Julie.
I'll call you later. Maybe.
Peyton follows Julie outside.
Julie, wait. I've been thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We should get married.
She looks at him uncertainly.
Marriage. Uh-huh. And I just started getting things going at the firm, and I really like having my own place.
We're practically living together now.
Oh.
All marriage means is you answer the phone in the morning, and if it's my grandmother, you don't have to pretend it's the wrong number. The poor woman's beginning to think she has Alzheimer's.
I can't talk about it now.
Come here. Jules, I'm asking you to marry me.
Hey, I love you.
I mean, I realized.
But I gotta think it over, okay?
Julie's yellow cab drives off, leaving a forlorn Peyton on the sidewalk. Later, Julie meets a dashing young businessman in his plush office.
Mr. Strack?
I've been going over some documents, and I've come across something that puzzles me. It's a memo from your office to a Mr. Claude Belisarius. It details certain payments that...
Yes, I know the memo.
Well, it seems like the payments were...
They were payoffs to the Zoning Commission. Bribes to call a spade a spade. Does that shock you?
No, I guessed as much.
You weren't supposed to know about it. That file was not supposed to circulate. However, I am asking you to understand. Take a look at that model, Julie. That's the dream. Acres of riverfront reclaimed from decay. Thousands of jobs created. A building block. A very large building block laid for the future. Not such a bad dream as dreams go. And if the price of realizing that dream is the occasional distasteful chore, well, I don't run away. I say so be it. So, wanna book me?
He holds out his wrists.
The fact remains that I'm in possession of evidence of the commission of a crime.
Well, let me suggest this. You excuse yourself for a few minutes. Go to the ladies' room, leaving your briefcase here. What happens to that memorandum while it's in my custody is my responsibility.
I wish it were that simple. But first of all, I don't have the memo with me.
I'm trying to protect you. Does the name Robert Durant mean anything to you?
Drugs, racketeering.
And real estate. Robert Durant is a competitor for the riverfront. He's a very dangerous man, Julie. And I fully believe he'd do anything to get his hands on that document.
Later that evening, back at Peyton's lab.
DNA content acceptable? Glucose, right on. We've even checked the collagen conagers. They're fine. This is unbelievable. Every day it's a
time
different combination.
Time?
98 minutes.
Peyton views the cells through a microscope, the lights cut out.
The circuit again. I'll fix it. I knew we were pulling too much juice on that line.
Hecatito, time?
Huh?
Time?
99. 100 minutes!
What? What? The cells. They're holding. They're stable.
But Dr. Westlake, why now?
The dark. Oh, of course. Dark. I
think the synthetic cells are photosensitive?
This is unbelievable.
What is it about the dark? What secret does it hold?
They're still stable.
Time, Yegatito, time.
101 minutes. Finally, we can replace damaged skin tissue.
No, Yegatito, no, not quite, my friend, not yet. All we've got is a piece of the puzzle. There's still a big question, how to keep the cells stable past 99 minutes in the light. But at least now we know it's all about light. I'll get it.
A hand grabs Peyton. The lights come on to reveal Durant's thugs. They attack the two scientists with fists and bottles. Slumps with Durant kneeling next to him, cigar cutter in hand.
No foolish heroics, if you please. We've come only for documents. Tell us where to find the Belisarius memorandum and we shall disappear. Like a nightmare before the breaking day.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Unfortunate.
What memorandum?
Peyton's head is smashed through glass cabinets. He is thrown into another cabinet, which tips over, crushing him onto the floor.
Ah! We want the memorandum. Should your houseboy's predicament not jog your memory, you may bid him Godspeed.
He's a lab assistant. For God's sakes, let him breathe.
You heard the doctor? Ventilate him.
A gun is put against Yakitito's plastic bag-covered head. Guzman finds the coffee-stained Belisarius memo.
Bingo!
Goody!
They drag Peyton to a vat of acid. He holds on for dear life to two electrodes either side, burning his hands horribly. He falls to the floor, his hands on fire. They pick him up and submerge his face into the vat of pink acid. Having turned on a gas canister, Durant places his lighter beneath a nodding toy woodpecker.
Bring the Asian's fingers.
He hands Smiley the cigar cutter.
Gentlemen.
Rick, I'm proud of you. Clean through the brain, that's how I like it.
Durant's gang leaves in triumph. The woodpecker hovers over the lighter. The gas canister leaks its flammable essence into the air, whilst the injured Peyton lies on the floor. Outside the lab, as the two gleaming shark-like Cadillacs drive off, Julie's yellow taxi pulls up. She looks up to the lab window. A horribly disfigured Peyton crawls his wretched body along the floor in an attempt to stop the canister from exploding. His mutilated face is focused, whilst his blackened hands reach out for the lighter, but he's too late. The woodpecker hits the lighter, which ignites the gas. A bright orange explosion rips apart the lab, sending the blackened body of Peyton flying through the window into the open mouth of the river as Julie watches helplessly. Later, Julie mourns alone at Peyton's funeral in front of his grave. She is dressed in black with a black veil. The gravedigger chats to the chauffeur by his car.
Didn't see you doing much work out there.
The guy got blown to pieces. All they found was an ear, tiny little piece. Didn't take me long to bury that.
The priest approaches a distraught Julie, who stumbles by a gravestone, overcome with grief. The priest and chauffeur help her to her feet and put her in a nearby car. Elsewhere, a mummified body is pulled from a tank of liquid and placed on a hospital gurney with nurses hovering above it like flies. A female doctor leads a group of medics on a tour around the hospital. They enter the room.
Yeah, we're gonna need some sponges.
Okay, I got them.
We'll get ready to move them. Let's check for the spots.
Get the gurney in here. Right there. Next, we have a 30, 35-year-old male, no ID, no medical history. He was found on the riverbank just south of the city. There's a sizable population of homeless and indigents there. We get at least three no-names like him every week. Nobody does anything about the homeless until they become train wrecks like Mr. John Doe here. He's got burns covering over 40% of his body. The hands and face are the most severe. 10 years ago, pain from the burns would have been intolerable. This man would have spent the rest of his life screaming. Now, we use the Rankervirus technique. Quite simply, we sever the nerves within the spinothalamic tract, there, which, as you know, transmits neural impulses of pain and vibratory sense to the brain. No longer receiving impulses of pain, you stick him with a pin, and he can't even feel it. As in many radical procedures, there are serious side effects to this operation. When the body ceases to feel, when so much sensory input is lost, the mind grows hungry. Starved of its regular diet of input, it takes the only remaining stimulation it has, the emotions, and amplifies them, giving rise to alienation, loneliness. Uncontrolled rage is not uncommon. Now surges of adrenaline flow unchecked through the body and brain, giving him augmented strength. Hence, the restraints. Naturally, we give them every chance of recovery. Remain optimistic, inspire confidence. Talk to him about rehabilitation potential.
The bandaged Peyton opens his eyes with a start.
Personally, I give him a 9 on the buzzard scale.
Restrained to a wheel that resembles a medieval torture device, panicked and scared, Peyton's mind takes him on a nightmarish rollercoaster of human skulls, burning fires and mocking laughter. The doctor and her team rush back into the room to find the restraints broken, the wheel spinning on its own, and the open windows clattering to the rhythm of a violent evening storm. Now, in a rain-lashed side street, the freshly escaped Peyton stumbles around, half-crazed. He rescues a long coat from a dumpster and throws it around his mummified body, although it offers little respite from the downpour. He falls into a puddle. Emerging in a daze, he glimpses Julie walking, umbrella aloft, on the far side of the street. He shuffles his broken body towards her, his bandaged hands outstretched, his parched voice trying to form her name. He touches her shoulder. She turns to face him. She runs from the apparition into the safety of a hotel. He collapses into the gutter. That night in an alley, the bitter wind snatches away a flimsy cardboard box, revealing a shivering Peyton curled up fetal style in a ball. Water from a gutter spews onto him, his long coat his only protection from the elements. His sad eyes peer out from his bandaged face, watching the rainwater go down the drain. Next day, Peyton is sifting through the burnt-out shell of his laboratory. Debris is scattered everywhere. Burnt pillars jut out.
My lab. All my work.
He picks up, examines, and discards an old monitor. He studies his bandaged hands, and in a frenzy, he darts over to a nearby wall and uses a broken piece of glass as a crude mirror. Using a smashed glass, he starts to cut away at the bandages covering his burnt face.
Oh my God, no.
No, no. No, no, no!
The glass falls onto a damaged photo of Julian Peyton with half his face burnt off. The next morning, wearing a trench coat, scarf and trilby over his bandages, Peyton pushes a shopping trolley full of salvaged equipment. He enters another part of his derelict lab with a condemned sign on its gates. Inside, he is standing on a raised platform in a large room, surrounded by defunct apparatus. A shaft of sunlight peeks through a hole in the roof, only slightly relieving the gloom. Tries to stroke a grey cat sitting on the platform.
Hello, my friend.
The cat lashes out at his bandaged hand. Peyton looks around the room, master of all he surveys. He nods.
Home.
Peyton charges up computers and connects cables as he brings the shattered lab back to life.
Good, good.
He hurls a burning newspaper into a furnace. It bursts into flames.
System.
System.
System. Ready for
digitization program. Enter
code.
Peyton scans the burnt photo of himself.
Okay.
Digitization.
In progress.
In progress.
The computer cannot scan his image as it is too damaged on one side.
Insufficient data.
Quadrant A, Quadrant C, unrecognizable. What am I doing wrong? What? Yes,
quadrants, quadrants, extrapolate.
He repairs the damaged image of his face by copying the unmarred side of the photo.
Digitization in progress.
The monitor reads facial reconstruction will take 571 hours and 57 minutes.
Yes, that's it. Clever, clever.
Peyton becomes engrossed in his work as he attempts to perfect the synthetic skin. Potions are mixed, calculations are made, and jars discarded in disgust as the word unstable appears in his notes.
Wrong. Wrong. Yeah.
Peyton works on against a backdrop of test tubes, pipettes, and scientific equipment. Scrawled on paper, the words, 99 minutes, total decay, highlight his mission. Hunched over his microscope, a flame from a Bunsen burner ignites Peyton's bandaged left hand. He stares at the flame engulfing his claw, feeling nothing, and then smothers it with a towel.
My hands. They took my hands.
Elsewhere at the Strack Industries City of the Future Ball, Lewis Strack Jr., the developer from earlier, talks to Julie at the bar.
Thank you for coming. Julie, with what you've been going through lately, I haven't wanted to bother you. But I have to know whether you've come to a decision regarding the Belisarius Memorandum.
The decision's been made for both of us. The papers were destroyed in the fire. And I'd rather not talk about it if you don't mind.
She walks away, distressed. He follows.
Julie, I'm sorry I mentioned that. Believe me, I understand how you feel. I really do. Unfortunately, there's no cure for grief. But there is something that eases the symptoms. It's called dancing.
Strap. Resplendent in dinner jacket and bow tie, whisks Julie around a packed dance floor. Peyton looks on in torment from behind a grill overlooking the lavish ballroom. He suddenly catches sight of Durant and a thin-faced, bespectacled thug called Rick, who is Yakatito's killer.
Would you like a martini?
Yes, I would love it.
Peyton has a frenzied flashback to that black night.
Ventilator.
Later, Rick is walking home down a dark alley when he hears a sudden noise behind him, stopping him in his tracks. He turns. A fleeting cloak shadow on the wall. A bandaged hand grabs Rick's face. Now in a sewer.
His name's Robert G. Durant! I told you I'd make the pickup! Again! Don't! I told you everything!
I know, Rick. I know you did. But let's pretend you didn't.
Having half-drowned Rick, Peyton now holds Rick's head up above a manhole cover as a human skittle for the oncoming night traffic. A lorry finishes him off.
Hey,
Here you are, doll.
You too, Maddie.
Here's your favorite. Mm. I'm pretty good today.
Next morning, the trench coat and trilby hatted Peyton takes photos of Paulie, Durant's bald-headed thug, eating at Ernie's Best Deli.
Wasn't it bad?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, guy.
What's up?
How are you, man?
Where's Rick?
I can't figure out what's wrong with his stomach.
Here's the cash, man.
Get you a gift, huh?
Yeah.
You be good.
Yummy.
Take care of business, man.
See you later, bro.
Having met two of the gang, Paulie leaves with a briefcase full of cash and a face full of food. Later, back at the lab.
System ready for digitization program. Enter code. Code recognized. Data entry required.
Watched by the cat, Peyton scans the photos and imports a 3D graph of Paulie's hand onto the computer screen. A liquid skin replica of the hand is created and suspended mid-air in between a blue, red, and green light.
System standing by.
The old lab equipment is fired up, and a compressor rises up in the air, cutting through the smoke. The hand is molded and fleshed out inside this piece of equipment. The two sheets slide apart to reveal a lifelike replica of Paulie's hand implanted on a metal rod. Peyton puts on the synthetic hand. He bends the fingers and studies it closely. He presses a couple of the fingers to check their integrity. It fits perfectly. Tapping away at a keyboard with the synthetic left hand and the withered right, Peyton recreates Paulie's face. Later, in Paulie's apartment, Peyton holds a chloroformed handkerchief over his sleeping face. Peyton takes a suitcase from Paulie's wardrobe and plants two plane tickets in it. He stands in front of the mirror, undoing the bandages around his face. The duplicated features of Paulie stare back, whilst the real Paulie slumbers in bed. Peyton gets out an electronic stopwatch. He starts the timer at 0 seconds. His fingers check the skin. He splashes his synthetic face with aftershave and adjusts the beige suit and Hawaiian shirt of Paulie's, which he is now wearing. He practices Paulie's smile in the mirror, although it comes across as more like a grimace. Inside Ernie's Best Deli, Peyton as Paulie sits nervously in front of an unappealing sausage breakfast, waiting for the others. He checks on the integrity of the synthetic skin in the reflective glass of a serviette holder.
Yo, Paulie!
Guzman and Skip, the two remaining hoods, arrive.
Hey, Durant wants to know where Rick is, and he is hot. I mean, really hot.
I mean, don't ask me why.
I know he likes Ricky.
Paulie, do you know where the hell Rick is?
Peyton freezes.
You okay, Paulie?
Yeah.
Here's the cash.
They slide a briefcase under the table towards Peyton, who picks it up and leaves. Back in his apartment, the real Paulie is waking up on his bed in a dapper blue suit. Durant and Guzman break down the door.
Oh,
Polly! We've been very concerned about you.
Hey, Mr. Durant. I must have overslept. I'm sorry. I guess I missed the pickup, huh?
Where's the money, Polly?
What money? I didn't make the pickup.
Durant spies the planted plane tickets in the open suitcase.
Rio. In first class. How delightful. And another one for Rick. Well, that explains his disappearance.
Hey, I don't know nothing about that.
Where is the money, Polly?
What money? I swear to God, Mr. Durant, I didn't make the pickup. I've been right here sleeping. Jesus, I swear to God. I don't even know how I got dressed.
Well, Polly. Have a nice flight.
Pauly plummets dozens of stories to his death, smashing onto the roof of a parked car. A female witness double takes when she sees Peyton sitting next to her, still disguised as Pauly. His face starts to bubble.
No.
Peyton looks at the timer, reading 98 minutes, 13 seconds, and runs away. Now Peyton perches high above the sleeping nighttime city between two gargoyles, his long dark coat catching the breeze.
Oh God, what have I become? What have I become?
Inside the lab, the ravaged Peyton stares through a microscope at the skin cells.
Please. Please hold. Oh, just this once.
Just after 99 minutes on the clock, the cells dissolve. Peyton, dejected and filthy, turns to the cat.
What am I? Huh? Some kind of a circus freak? Is that it? Huh? Some kind of a freak? Maybe I should be wearing a funny little hat. Do you like it? Yeah? Yeah? See the dancing freak? Pay $5 to see the dancing freak. Only $5 to see the dancing freak. $5.
He dances round the lab like a demented figure in a freak show. His uncontrollable rage takes hold as he lashes out at his lab, smashing everything in his path. Images of that fateful night haunt him. Durant, the bubbling acid, the explosion.
I'll get your soul! I'll get your goddamn soul! I'll show you who you're freak!
Julie's face flashes before him. He catches sight of his reflection in a pool of water.
Oh, God. Oh, Jesus, God. Oh, keep the lid on it. I'm a scientist. That's it. Think objectively. Analyze. Wait. That's it. Control the rage. Just take it easy, Ben. Just take it easy, boy. I'm a scientist.
Reconstruction program. Reconstruction program complete.
The wounded animal that is now Peyton stares through his grubby bandages at the reconstructed image of his face before the accident. His eyes fill with tears as he looks up at his unblemished earlier self in hope and wonder. Later, sunlight bathes the cemetery where Julie is visiting Peyton's grave. She places a single white rose on his tombstone. Sensing that someone is watching her, she looks up, her shoulder-length blonde hair framing her pretty face. She is frozen to the spot.
Julie!
A healthy-looking, besuited Peyton approaches.
Oh.
It's all right, Julie. It's me, sweetheart.
No.
Please, Julie, please, don't be afraid. Listen to me.
Who are you?
It's me, Peyton.
You are dead.
No, no, Jules, no. I was in a hospital, a coma, dead to the world. Jules, please. Please, please hold me.
They embrace.
I'm sorry. I didn't know how to tell you. And I needed to see you. I needed to know if things could be the same.
Yes, but Peyton, I don't understand.
I know it's a shock. Well, Julie, there's so much to it. And I'll tell you everything. I just need a little time.
Then just hold me, Peyton, and don't let go.
I just need a little time.
Later, in a cafe in the park.
All right. I understand why the doctor said you shouldn't see me after the coma. That's their opinion. What's yours?
I've got to have the time to work this out, Julie. On my own.
But where does that leave us, Peyton? I don't want to be without you again.
I need you too, Jules. That's why I'm here.
She reaches towards his face, but he grabs her hand.
It's just that I feel like a rag doll, all pieced together. You know, my insides are on my outside. If you could only see how I feel inside. I was ashamed, afraid. I was afraid that you wouldn't want me anymore.
Of course I still want you.
Julie, what if I was hurt? Like horribly scarred, that you couldn't bear to look at me anymore. You couldn't even bear to have me touch you. What then?
Huh? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know, Kate. Why do you ask me that? And look at you, you're fine. And you're back.
He smiles.
Yes, I am back, aren't I? Just like always.
He kisses her hand with great tenderness. She gazes at him. Nighttime, the exterior of a mock Tudor mansion. Inside, a hand strokes a stuffed rabbit.
The name isn't Buddy, it's Durant. Robert G. Durant, and I wish to speak to Mr. Guzman.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rudy, there's some asshole on the phone.
Durant picks up a box full of severed fingers.
Rudy, pay attention. Don't speak, listen. The funds Polly misappropriated are beginning to nettle me. It's caused a serious cash flow problem. Did you receive certain monies from Chinatown today?
No.
Unfortunate. Then we shall have to call upon Hung Fat. Either he provides the revenues owed to us, or he becomes part of my collection. It would make a nice addition.
That's right.
So you want me to pick you up at your place tomorrow morning around 8:30?
That would be just fine.
Peyton stands outside the house, listening to the tapped phone call.
That would be just fine.
Back at the lab, he plays the tape.
That would be just fine. That would be just fine. That would be just fine.
A replica of Durant's head rotates in front of him.
That would be
just fine.
Now, CCTV footage shows Durant holding up a convenience store with a gun.
Would you like a bag for this, please, buddy?
That would be just fine.
Hey, take this, buddy.
My name isn't Buddy. It's Durant. Robert G. Durant.
Yes, I'm Robert G. Durant.
Durant is handcuffed by two cops at his home.
Just fine.
Meanwhile, Peyton, disguised as Durant, rides in the back of a Cadillac with Guzman and Skip to Chinatown. He nervously fidgets with the fake skin of his face as a puzzled Guzman looks at him. He consults his stopwatch, which reads 90 minutes, 5 seconds as they enter the Hong Kong restaurant. They climb the stairs and enter a back room where an elderly Chinese man, immaculately dressed in a white suit, greets them.
Robert, so good of you to favor me with your venerated presence.
The money.
The money? Yes, Robert. How I tremble with shame. I have no money.
Meanwhile, Durant outside the courtroom.
How many times do I have to tell you I was nowhere near any convenience store, you nitwit?
Hey, I could barely get him to post bail. They had the whole thing on video.
Just keep him out of my hair.
I still need you to sign those papers. Hey, where are you going?
Hong Kong restaurant, fast.
White powder no longer flows in its former volume. All the members of Tong languish in poverty. Of all your unworthy servants, my fat is the most destitute. Even my own miserable slaves sometimes ignore my wishes and upset those whom I cherish most deeply. So, until that shining day, may it soon come, when I shall once again honor you with offerings. Goodbye, Wabat. Wabat, goodbye.
Hung Fat shakes the fake Durant's hand in an attempt to make him leave. He looks at the stopwatch, which now reads over 93 minutes. He slowly moves past Guzman and Hung Fat's three heavies, sits down and removes his cigar and cutter from his jacket pocket.
You will provide the revenues owed to us by the time I finish this cigar.
But Robert...
He cuts the cigar to little more than a stump, places it in his mouth and lights it. With his shark-like blue eyes locked onto Hung Fat, he calmly holds the match beneath his own left hand and lets the flame burn his skin. He is oblivious to the pain. The others look on in shock as his flesh singes.
Okay, Bob. You win.
Outside in Chinatown, the real Durant's cab is stranded as a street parade takes place. Brightly colored paper dragons lead the procession.
Damn! Drive!
I can't go no further. Sorry, it's a parade.
I'll get there myself.
Hey, what about the fan?
Eat it!
Durant gets out the cab.
Move!
Hey! Wait,
move it!
He sprints along, knocking away bystanders, and finds Skip in the Cadillac.
Where is he?
Where's who?
Guzman!
I thought he was with you.
Shit.
Durant runs to the Hong Kong restaurant and in the revolving doors comes face to face with his fake self. Guzman looks on incredulous.
Dios mío, ¿qué pasa? There's two of those son of a bitches!
The Durants lock eyes as the doors begin to revolve.
Shoot him! Shoot him!
Which one is Durant?
Not me, him! Shoot him! Shoot him!
God damn it!
Whose little boy are you? It doesn't matter. You're dead.
The Durants fight.
No. This one.
Don't just stand there. Do something!
One is floored.
Son of a bitch sets me up with the cops and you practically hand him the cash.
The standing Durant's face starts to bubble. He punches Guzman and runs.
Mr. Durant, I'm sorry!
The fake Durant runs away, shielding his face, which is disintegrating and steaming. The real Durant follows, shooting.
I got
Caton escapes. On the ground lies the bubbling, synthetic face. Durant and the Hoods sheath their weapons and look on dumbfounded. Now Peyton and Juliet of Funfair.
Step right up and take a spin on the amazing...
Rides whiz around, people laugh at the clowns and the trick mirrors. Screams of delight resound in the summer air.
Oh, will you stop looking at that watch?
Sorry.
To hell with time. Forget about going back to the hospital, Peyton. We're going to spend the whole day together. The whole night.
I'd love to, honey, but you know I can't. I've got my therapy tools.
Oh, Peyton, we need more time together. Tell me why you're so uncomfortable with me.
All right, Jules. Listen to me. I gotta tell you something about me. How I've changed. When I was
see
in the hospital,
the mutant man, I... ladies and gentlemen. Half man, half beast. Witness this cruel accident of science with your own eyes.
A mutated man cowers in front of the fascinated and repelled crowd.
Everybody gather around and look closely, as you can see.
Peyton, what? Peyton, what is it?
When I was in the hospital, was there someone else?
No. Yes, there was a man who comforted me, and I respected him for his kindness, but he means nothing to me. Oh, Pate, is that what it was? Is that what it was, Pate?
Oh, God, I love you, darling. Oh, it's good to be back. Oh, Julie Hastings, I'm gonna win for you the biggest, fuzziest, pinkest animal doll in that rack.
Yes.
And then I gotta run. Sir.
You always have to run. Why does it always have to be so dramatic?
I have my hospital sessions, Jules. I'm not 100% cured yet, but I soon will be.
Where is this place exactly? Pate, I want to be involved somehow. Can I at least take you back there?
No. No, please, Julie. I don't want you to see me there. I don't want you to think of me as an invalid or some... kind of a
freak. Peyton sends the bottles flying with his last throw.
The pink elephant, please.
I'm sorry, buddy. It don't count unless you're behind the line.
Well, I was behind the line.
Not hard.
I was standing right here with my girlfriend. Now, the pink elephant, if you please.
No way.
Peyton struggles to control his anger at the cheating stall holder.
It doesn't matter, Peyton.
It matters. I won a pink elephant for my girlfriend.
Why don't you just, get lost, Al?
Elephant. Quickly.
Didn't you hear me? Weirdo.
The stallholder jabs his finger into Peyton's chest. A nightmarish red mist descends on Peyton. He bends back the stallholder's fingers. He throws the stallholder with superhuman strength.
Take it.
No!
Take it.
Please.
Take the fucking elephant.
Peyton's face starts to bubble.
Please, no. Forgive me.
Peyton runs away, but she follows.
Peyton,
wait! Half man and a freak! He's a freak, ladies and gentlemen! He's a freak! A freak!
Julie follows Peyton and sees him run into the lab, his face smoldering. She enters the lab cautiously. The anguished Peyton hides behind some boxes. The lower half of his face is a mass of pulpy, reddish-purple muscle with no skin. There's a charred black stump where his left ear used to be, and he has no chin or top lip, causing his teeth to jut out as if from a skull. Julie searches the lab and sees the mask Peyton was wearing discarded on a desk. As she moves towards it, it dissolves.
Why didn't you tell me, Peyton? You should have told me. You should have come to me, Peyton. You didn't have to lie.
Julie crouches down, leaning against a banister as she speaks to the unseen Peyton.
I would have tried to help you. I can help you now. You don't have to hide from me anymore, Peyton.
He holds his scorched head in his hands. As Julie leaves, he begins to sob. Later, Julie is in Strack's office.
Julie!
Lewis, we have to talk.
Excellent. I love to talk. Brandy?
No.
I'll have one. Fair warning, it's Napoleon, and it's quite good.
I can't see you anymore.
Honey, take it easy. As you say, let's talk.
Lewis, you know about Peyton, the man I was involved with?
Of course.
He's alive. He's back.
I won't be a moment.
Strack walks into another room to take the call.
Yes?
Julie spots a memo on his desk.
I feel sufficiently diversified. France, it is immaterial to me what the market is doing. I want you to buy 10,000 kroner.
Her fingers run along the familiar coffee stain as a look of horrified recognition dawns on her face. Strack suddenly appears behind her.
Yes, the Belisarius memorandum. I'm sorry you had to find that, Julie. Our relationship didn't need this further strain.
You burned Peyton's lab.
Not me, personally. I have an employee who does certain things for me, unofficially, off the books. Robert doesn't like to pay taxes.
And now you'll kill me.
Hardly. You have nothing on me. And you'd find the extremely expensive police department quite unsympathetic. Julie, consider the big picture. Consider what we're building here.
Two panels slide back to reveal a panoramic view of the riverfront project, unfinished skyscrapers surrounded by gigantic cranes.
You and I, we're building a city. We can't let anything get in the way of that. Despite the way things might appear, you can't pretend that certain moments haven't passed between us. We still have that.
She recoils from his touch.
If you're not going to kill me, I have things to do.
He advances menacingly, but moves past her and holds open the door.
I suppose this is goodbye then.
Julie leaves.
Send Robert in.
He downs his Napoleon brandy and awaits Durant.
Robert, I have good news and bad.
Custom dictates that you render the bad news first.
We have a little problem with Miss Hastings. It appears she has uncovered our alliance.
No problem at all. And the good news?
Your wife died. I'm joking, of course. No, the good news is that I know who's behind our little troubles of late. When you retrieved my memorandum, you failed to excise the good doctor.
Westlake? He's extinct. I saw to it myself.
He's alive. I don't like loose ends, Robert. Finish it.
Where is he?
I believe we have a guide.
Now Julie is outside the lab, looking up at the bandaged face of Peyton, who lurks inside behind a window. They share a tender look, full of longing and regret. Suddenly, two Cadillacs burst into view, spilling out heavily armed thugs who seize Julie. Ricochet of piping, pinning Peyton to the floor. Julie is bundled into a Cadillac, which hurtles away. Guzman and Smiley enter the lab, shooting. Peyton runs along the corrugated iron of the roof, chasing the speeding Cadillac below. Suddenly, a helicopter appears, with a minigun-wielding Durant inside. Peyton runs for his life along the different levels of the roof, spurred on by explosions that erupt inches behind him. Sprints along an iron walkway, bullets whizzing past him. His coat snags on a rail. Durant has him in the crosshairs of the minigun. Peyton avoids the explosion by sliding down a ladder into the safety of his lab. Inside, a machine gun-wielding Guzman snatches aside a plastic curtain to reveal a ghoulish gallery of synthetic hands and faces. They search the lab for Peyton.
Smiley, is that you? Smiley!
A sweating Guzman shifts nervously.
Where the hell are you?
Close.
Shadows hide in every nook and cranny. The scarred Guzman on edge and jumpy. The flying Peyton pounces on the helpless thug like a bat out of hell. Elsewhere in the sprawling lab, the long-haired crook Smiley is poised for action. A figure runs towards him, hands tied behind his back. He pistol whips him to the ground. He examines the face, then gingerly removes a latex mask, using the tip of his gun to reveal Peyton's face. The eyes open and the figure sits up, trying to tell him something. He guns him down, then leans over the bullet-riddled corpse and removes yet another synthetic face to reveal Guzman, gagged and dead.
Holy shit.
Good shooting.
He looks up to see his own doppelganger standing next to him. It's Peyton, who punches him repeatedly. Durant lands his helicopter on the roof.
Shut it down! Shut it down! I won't be done, I guess I'll have to do it myself.
Okay, Durant!
Peyton's hand grabs Durant's throat.
I'm going down there to take care of that son! Take it up! Take it up!
Peyton clings to Durant through the open chopper door as it takes off. A thug pistol whips Peyton and throws him off. Smiley comes to in the lab, surrounded by leaking gas canisters.
Oh, shit!
Smiley sprints to where a toy woodpecker hovers over a lighter, but it's a hologram. The real lighter is on the other side of the lab. Outside, Durant pulls the mask off Peyton and pushes him off the chopper. Peyton clasps onto a winch that swings from the chopper.
Holographic imaging complete.
In the lab, the gas ignites, killing Smiley. Peyton swings below the chopper over the burning lab.
You're next, Durant! I'm coming for you!
Shit, you!
The chopper flies into the city, swinging Peyton and trying to knock him against the skyscrapers. Police chopper gives chase to the vengeful Peyton's annoyance.
What the hell was that? Go after him! I got him!
The two helicopters race between the tall buildings. Peyton hurtles towards a skyscraper and smashes through a window, interrupting a meeting.
Excuse me.
The helicopter yanks him out again as the police chopper closes in. Durant replies with a hail of bullets.
Dip it!
Peyton is dangled like fish bait in front of the fast-moving freeway traffic. He dives and dodges the oncoming vehicles. Car hits him, but he still clings to the winch.
No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Durant's minigun rips apart the police chopper. He now aims at Peyton below. Car cars explode in bright orange fireballs as the minigun rips up the freeway. Peyton lands on the roof of a lorry and attaches the winch to it.
What the hell's he up to?
The lorry drags the chopper down into the concrete embrace of an oncoming tunnel.
Kiss your ass goodbye!
On the lorry, Peyton speeds away from the fireball.
Burn in hell!
Later, a white Cadillac cuts through the dark towards Strack's building site. Strack and a gagged and bound Julie are met by a cut and bruised cigar-smoking Durant.
Look like hell, Robert.
That son of a bitch Westlake malfunctioned my helicopter.
How terrible for you.
He's a cockroach. You think you kill him, and he pops up someplace else.
I expect he'll pop up here soon. See, I know how he thinks. I don't think the world will grieve over one less attorney.
They get into a lift which rises to the top floor.
It's the tragedy of my life that I have to kill the ones I love. My wife, late wife, held certain deeds. I sent her on a plane trip over the Smokies. Let's just say, I landed on my feet.
They emerge onto steel girders and an awaiting thug grabs Julie.
I'm glad you survived, Robert. I'd hate to see your kids deprived of a role model.
They do look up to me.
When I was young, my father made me work high steel. Just me and the Indians. No one else crazy enough to run around up here against the wind. $4.50 an hour. Call me crazy. Sometimes I miss it. Life on the edge. 5 inches wide, 650 feet down.
Strack pirouettes on the narrow beams at the top of the skyscraper's skeleton.
Oh, by the way, you don't have any kids, Robert.
A strap rips off Durant's face, exposing the full horror of Peyton. Julie screams.
You truly are one ugly son of a bitch. What do you think, Julie? Who's the real monster here? I destroyed to build something better. Whereas you, you're a man who destroys for revenge. Look. Look about you. It's all mine. Because I built it. I built it all!
Peyton, on unsteady feet, lunges at Strack.
What have you got, besides a little trouble with your complexion? I'm joking, of course. A troubled conscience?
A little blood on your hands from what you consider justice? Justice. You and I know it's just another word for what I do. We should be working together. I could use a man like you. That's why I brought you up here.
They dodge each other.
You can make a lot of money working for me. And if you still want her, I'll throw in Julie. Sound good? Oops.
Peyton launches himself at Strack. They tumble off the beam to a lower level. Strack's thug fires at Peyton, but Julie pushes him over. He clings desperately to a beam. She removes her gag. He gets up and pushes Julie off.
Bitch!
Her manacled hands loop over a hanging beam. She dangles above the city. Strack and Peyton fight.
There you go!
Julie!
Julie hangs precariously while Strack, whirling like a dervish, punches Peyton in the face. His balance slipping, Peyton tries to fend off the iron winches that Strack and his man swing at him.
You're going down, Burnhead!
Peyton yanks a winch, which catches the henchman's trouser leg, swinging him upside down in midair. Strack fires a nail gun, which severs the rope and sends the hood plummeting to his death. Strack fires nails point blank at Peyton. The last one finds its target, embedding into Peyton's right hand and nailing him crucifix style to the scaffolding.
In your absence, I've gotten to know Julie quite intimately. Her tastes are varied. But I can tell you this, she doesn't date freaks.
Fueled by fury, Peyton rips his hand free and launches his fists at Strack. Julie is slipping. As she falls, Peyton swings on a rope and catches her in his arms. Strack's nails whiz around them. He swings back towards Strack and kicks him squarely in the face, dislodging him from the narrow beam. Peyton seizes Strack's ankle as he falls, holding him upside down.
Go ahead! Do it, Westlake! But think of this! You let me die, and you become as bad as me, worse! You can! I know you too well! Dropping me, it's not really an option for you. It's not something you can live with.
Peyton closes his eyes and lets go.
I'm learning to live with a lot of things.
The morning sun rises on the skyscrapers. Julie and Peyton are inside the descending lift.
Don't look at me.
I want to look.
Peyton turns his hideous head to Julie. She gasps.
You'll perfect the skin. You'll make it work. It doesn't matter.
Julie. Don't you think I told myself that? Night after sleepless night. It's just a burn, skin deep, it doesn't matter. And if I covered it, hid behind a mask, you could love me for who I was inside, without pity. But a funny thing happened. As I worked in the mask, I found the man inside was changing. He became wrong. A monster. I can live with it now, but I don't think anyone else can.
They get out the lift, and she buries her face into his bruised and bloodied side.
I want our life back.
He turns and walks away. Julie follows.
Peyton is gone.
He hobbles away into the shadows. Julie's eyes brim with tears. He places on another mask and leaves, pursued by a running Julie. As she spills into the morning human traffic, she grabs at random pedestrians, searching for her love. From behind the new synthetic face, Peyton stares at her for the last time, then disappears into the crowd.
Hey!
Hey! I'm everyone. And no one. Everywhere.
Thank you.